It's been underwritten by WineAndCereal.com and Susan Lusader. For more information, visit our website, BoomGoddessRadio.com, and follow us on Facebook, Boom Goddess. We'd love to hear from you. Your interest powers our programs.
KZFR presents in Chico, an evening with Joe Craven and the Sometimers. It's Friday, November 15th at the Chico Women's Club. Joe Craven and the Sometimers feature Jonathan Stoyanoff, Bruce McMillan, Barry Eldridge, Hattie Craven, and Joe Craven.
I said I'm running, but I'll take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend, friend of mine.
Joe Craven and the Sometimers at the Chico Women's Club, Friday, November 15th.
If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight.
No genre left behind is their music motto. And we play in songs from their latest CD, The Garcia Songbook.
Once in a while, you get shown the light. The strangest of places if you look at it right.
Don't miss Joe Craven and the Sometimers, Friday, November 15th at the Chico Women's Club. It's a benefit for KZFR, beer by Sierra Nevada. Tickets only $15. Get them in advance at Chico Paper Company, Blazin' J's, KZFR.org, KZFR's office, and brownpapertickets.com. Doors 6:30, shows 7:30. This is a seated show. Joe Craven and the Sometimers, Friday, November 15th at the Women's Club.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Non-human radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Ohm Foods, serving organic, non-GMO whole foods, including Walcott Mahi Mahi, and having the largest vegan menu in downtown Chico. Ohm Foods serves homemade teas and lemonade, acai bowls and smoothies blended with coconut water, and you can find them at 142 Broadway, just two blocks from Chico State. They're open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. with to-go and catering available. For more info, you can find them at iloveohmfoods.com and, of course, on Facebook. We're also made possible by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. Up next, Non-Human Radio. And welcome to show 1944, the October 30th, 2019 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal news, animal rights, and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, people-powered radio. Today's show will cover issues involving trafficking of wild animals and breaking news that New York City passed a comprehensive animal welfare package banning the sale of foie gras, improving conditions for carriage horses, issuing protections for wild pigeons, incredibly, and creating a mayoral office for animal welfare that will oversee the intersection of issues and agencies relating to non-human animals in this big city. We'll end, as always, with the Chico Vegan Calendar of Events. And before I get going, I want to thank all the KZFR listeners and supporters who called in, stopped in, or clicked online to support the station. KZFR did achieve its goal of $50,000, so we will be able to keep bringing you our own unique mix of programming and music. Thank you to all the vendors who brought chai, coffee, muffins, pizza, and other sustenance to answer the phones. And my greatest thanks, my special thanks to Maria, Rebecca, and Leah, who all called in pledges to support Non-Human Radio. I'm really sorry I wasn't able to acknowledge you on air at that time. Things were a little crazy. Anyway, thank you all. On to our first news story. This story is from National Geographic on animal trafficking. Many of Africa's most exported animals end up in the United States, according to a new report by the World Animal Protection Group, an international nonprofit that promotes animal welfare. The report focuses on legal exports from Africa of both the both live animals and the skins of animals that are listed on the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, CITES. You've heard this mentioned many times on the show. This is a global treaty that regulates the wildlife trade. The ball python is legally exported from Africa more than any other species listed by CITES. The snake's popularity as an exotic pet drives demand, especially from the U.S. The countries of Ghana, Togo, and Benin all reported 99.9% of ball pythons traded from Africa between 2011 and 2015. In total, those countries that 99.9% of snakes exported from Africa come from those three countries, and they total 591,000 live snakes. Significantly, between 2011 and 2015, more than half the ball pythons, emperor scorpions, and savannah monitor lizards were destined for the United States, which is the largest consumer of live wildlife globally and imports millions of animals a year, mostly for the pet trade. None of these three species is considered threatened at this time, but all are listed by CITES. For species like these, export is permitted only if the animal is obtained legally and if its trade won't hurt the species' chance of survival. The Nile crocodile, Cape fur seal, Hartman's mountain zebra, elephant, and hippopotamus were the five animals most frequently exported as skins, used to make everything from handbags to rugs. A significant portion of these larger animals' skins, which comprise more than 40% of elephants and 16% of Hartman's mountain zebra, were actually imported into the U.S., again, between the time period of 2011 and 2015. But a more common destination was Asia, which received more than 60% of Africa's Nile crocodile skin exports. Hong Kong alone received more than half of the hippopotamus skins. Who knew? And who cares? I care. Nearly 70% of Cape fur seal skins went to Turkey. International trade. Many of these animals are being driven to extinction, even though both exotic pets and skins are completely luxury purchases, says Neil DeCruz, World Animal Protection's head of wildlife research and animal welfare, who contributed to this report from National Geographic. African elephants, hippopotamuses, and Hartman's mountain zebras are all considered vulnerable to extinction by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, the IUCN, which is the global authority on the conservation status of wild animals and plants. Edith Kabisime, World Animal Protection's Uganda-based wildlife campaign manager, who also contributed to this report, says that largely people still look at wildlife as commodities. And the article goes on to say, just because trade is illegal, that doesn't make it humane. The group says, quote, these are wild animals, not factory-produced goods, end quote. The report accounts for conditions in which animals are transported also. Ball pythons, for example, are shipped in cramped, stress-inducing crates, and emperor scorpions are held in small plastic containers until they're sold to pet owners who likely aren't equipped to provide them with the hot, humid environments that they need. Savannah monitor lizards are often sourced from captive breeding facilities, which can be opaque when it comes to animal welfare, says the World Animal Protection. The sheer volume of animals the U.S. imports implies that animals are expendable, says Delciana Winders, director of animal law litigation at Lewis and Clark University in Portland, Oregon. She says, we're importing millions of live wild animals into this country every year. It's basically an assumption that you're going to lose some, end quote. Neil DeCruz, World Animal Protection's head of wildlife research and animal welfare, says that the findings highlight the hidden costs of wildlife trade. including problems of animal welfare and the long-term sustainability of populations. The information should encourage buyers to think about their role in the legal wildlife trade. Quote, it shouldn't just be Africa's responsibility, he says. I think we need to start looking at the role that we, Americans, play as consumers. And that was a report from National Geographic titled, U.S. Demand for Pets and Skins Threatens Some African Animals. You're listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Our second news story, continuing with wild animals. Animal protection groups in China have expressed sadness and disappointment about the arrival of some 30 baby African elephants from Zimbabwe in a case that has caused outrage among global wildlife campaigners. This article, interestingly, is from a news source called Inkstone News, and it is primarily Asian and primarily actually transmitting information and news reporting from China, which is not someplace where I usually go to look for news. And I think it's interesting because this shows the activism that's going on in China. So we'll continue on about these baby elephants. The wild-caught baby elephants, estimated to be between 2 and 6 years old, arrived last week at Shanghai's Pudong Airport, according to two animal rights groups. The elephants are believed to be undergoing 1 month of inspection and quarantine at an unknown location before being sent to zoos across China. Keeping elephants caught from the wild in zoos is considered cruel by conservation groups. Zimbabwean wildlife protection groups had filed court papers at the Harare High Court in a bid to stop this shipment, which happened just weeks before a near-total ban imposed by the regulator of global wildlife trade on sending African elephants captured from the wild to zoos. And listeners will recall that we reported on that in the context of United States zoos a few weeks ago. A spokesman for the Beijing-based animal advocacy group called Freedom for the Animal Actors told Inkstone that she was in the process of filing a formal request to Chinese customs officials to find out where the animals will go. The group said that they hoped this group of elephants could be returned, adding that zoos in China don't have policies in place about the size of enclosures for elephants or how they should be treated. In other words, they have even less requirements than the United States. At the moment, Chinese zoos either don't have standards in place to care for the elephants or have very low standards. Members of CITES, the regulator of the global wildlife trade, voted in August of this year to impose a near-total ban on elephant exports starting in November. Zimbabwe, a top seller of elephants to the United States and to China, had opposed the ban. Using CITES data, Iris Ho of Humane Society International said Zimbabwe had sold 108 elephants to China since 2012, not including the current group of 32, at a price of $40,000 to $60,000 each. So you can see this is an income stream for whatever agencies or operations are housing these young elephants. And I think it's interesting, too, that they're calling baby elephants anywhere from 2 to 6 years old. Kevin Guo, a press officer for PETA Asia, said that the group was watching the situation and planned to initiate a boycott of the zoos that get these baby elephants. And that was a report from just from the other day, to October 28th, titled Chinese Animal Rights Groups Outraged About Arrival of Baby Elephants. And that's from Inkstone website. And I'll go ahead and post the show notes to the Non-Human Radio Facebook page where you can learn more about all these stories. I think this is sad, but I also think it's interesting because we're looking at animal rights advocacy popping up all over. We tend to think of it because we see everything through the English language lens that we are the only ones who are aware or fighting for these animals, when in fact plenty of people share our concerns, share at least my concerns for animals, and that they are willing to be activist in perhaps a government situation that's even more onerous than what we have here in the United States. Our next news story, we'll be taking a look at the role that social media markets, specifically Facebook, plays in the trade of exotic animals. This is On a hot, muggy day in October, an exotic pet trapper in an Indonesian forest snatched a young Javan gibbon from his mother, stuffed the animal in a sack, and took to his heels. A day later, that gibbon, a protected species, was offered for sale on Facebook. A scroll down through the trafficker's timeline reveals more gibbons, birds, and other endangered species on offer. The sale of gibbons and endangered species is illegal under Indonesian law, and in March of this year, traffickers in Indonesia were arrested and tried for the illegal sale of Komodo dragons on Facebook. However, the same would not be true for another accomplice in this crime sequence, Facebook. When it comes to crime on social media, the enabler always walks free. It's time for regulators to take steps to hold online platforms accountable for facilitating the illegal trafficking of wildlife. For traffickers engaging in some of the world's biggest black market trades, Facebook is the enabler. The company serves as a vehicle for thousands of traffickers who sell illegal goods using Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram to market their goods, connect with and negotiate sales with buyers, and even receive payments. More than two decades ago, the U.S. Congress passed the Communications Decency Act, the CDA, which included Section 230. The bill was meant to mitigate the risk for firms of hosting third-party content on Internet platforms. Senator Ron Wyden, one of the bill's sponsors, said that CDA, the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, was envisioned to provide a sword and a shield. The sword was meant to enable technology firms to self-police content on their platforms as they saw fit. The shield provided those platforms with sweeping immunity from liability for content posted by third parties. As it turned out, the sword was made of rubber and the shield was made of Teflon. Tech firms broadly, and Facebook in particular, failed to hold up their end of the bargain, however. Huge cyberspace marketplaces exist where buyers and sellers trade illegal products ranging from drugs, wildlife, antiquities, and human remains to human beings themselves. Facebook's closed and secret groups provide insulated environments for transnational criminals to connect, advertise, and move material. Facebook has a set of policies banning illegal activity laid out in its terms of service and community standards, but these are only as effective as their enforcement, and the company's content moderation leaves much to be desired. Facebook and other social media firms mainly rely on algorithms and artificial intelligence to moderate harmful content. But investigations by the Alliance to Counter Crime Online, the ACCO, show time and again how these algorithms actually connect traffickers faster than moderators can remove their accounts. They suggest friends and recommend groups, putting illicit actors in touch with one another, continually expanding networks of users engaging in similar illegal activities. In response to increasing pressure from wildlife organizations, Facebook and Instagram banned the sale of all animals in 2017, but a cursory search on either platform will turn up countless groups and individuals still advertising domestic and exotic pets, even zoo animals, for sale. Ivory and rhino horn are sold using code words in closed groups. The same is true on other online platforms such as Alibaba, Taobao, which is owned by Alibaba, Google, Baidu, and more. Along with Facebook and Instagram, these platforms are all founding members of the Global Coalition to End Wildlife Trafficking Online. Launched in May 2018, the coalition's stated goal is to reduce online wildlife trafficking by 80% by 2020. The technology companies involved in the coalition are clearly very far from achieving that goal. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, CITES, recently introduced a revised resolution that included key recommendations to deal with these online issues. The amended resolution was accepted, making clear that CITES parties recognize that it is up to them and not to the online platforms to develop measures to control the illegal trade in wildlife. A crucial revision noted that the resolution recommends that parties, quote, identify key contacts at online technology and data companies that can help with the provision of information upon request from these for these investigations. In November 2016, Max Slackman, Facebook's animal policies manager, contacted the author of the commentary that I'm reading and told him, "We would like to learn more about your investigation, and if there are additional learnings that you can share, please do." The author sent over the requested information and asked if Facebook could help in the investigation of the dealers and assist in arrests and prosecutions. As ACCO researchers have pointed out time and again, simply closing accounts doesn't stop the trafficking. Traffickers simply set up new accounts with tighter privacy. Not only that, Facebook's practice of deleting accounts rather than archiving and disabling them erases years of valuable evidence that could actually help prosecute criminals and actually impact the illicit trade. So that was news to me. I figure, oh, Facebook deletes a problematic group of any stripe, that their content is archived so that law enforcement, or in this case, CITES, can help, can use that information to help prosecute. But it looks like in this case, that all that information is just deleted. So pictures, times, dates, locations, all that's deleted. The Facebook response was one that the ACCO group has come to find typical of a company that is skirting responsibility for crime on its platforms. Facebook told him, quote, "We do work with law enforcement through the warrant process, and we try to make the process as easy as possible for law enforcement to produce legally sufficient warrants. But due to our privacy policy and requirements, we are not able to share information about accounts with third parties," like this ACCO group. While hiding behind the company's privacy policy, Facebook essentially confirmed that Facebook does not take proactive measures to counter crime. His response framed the company's internal policies as a more powerful factor in their actions than the presence of activity that violates national and international laws. Individuals selling illegal commodities online can be prosecuted, but there are not yet any legal pathways in the U.S. that formalize and regulate cooperation between online service providers and law enforcement, mainly due to privacy policies and regulations. The crux of the problem in getting effective cooperation from the titans of Silicon Valley to push illegal and dangerous activities offline is the uncomfortable fact that such cooperation conflicts with their business model. The online service providers make their money from user engagement and clicks, whether it be to purchase a commodity, to read an ad, or in the case of online black markets, do business with a trafficker. Any actions that service providers take to reduce user engagement reduces Facebook's bottom line. Big tech has made clear that they aren't interested in wielding their sword. It's up to governments to enact legislation that compels social media firms to modify their algorithms to detect illegal activity instead of facilitating it. Facebook, Google, and other technology firms are sophisticated and rake in billions in annual revenue. They're more than capable of combating the crime on their platforms, but there's nothing in the law that requires them to do so. That needs to change. The U.S. Congress has started the discussion. Other countries where online platforms are based that engage in illegal wildlife trade, particularly in China, need to step up their enforcement actions as well. Legislatures will have to achieve the admittedly difficult task of assigning responsibility to online service providers to decide how to balance free speech, legitimate commerce, and user privacy against dangerous communications, illegal trade, and reporting user abuse to the appropriate national and international authorities. And the author of this commentary is a contributing member of the Alliance to Counter Crime Online. His piece was published on a Australian site called mangabay.com that has a lot of environmental and animal rights type content. And that was published October 25th, 2019. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. Listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. And for our last news of the day, breaking news from New York City. Today, the City Council of New York voted to prohibit the sale of most foie gras, a staple at many of New York's finest restaurants, beginning in 2022. The New York City Council overwhelmingly passed legislation today that will ban the sale of foie gras in the city, one of the country's largest markets for foie gras, beginning in 2022. New York City will join California, yay California, in prohibiting the sale of foie gras, which is the fattened liver of a duck or goose, because of animal cruelty concerns. In case you don't know it, most foie gras is produced through a process known as gavage. Ducks are force-fed a fatty corn-based mixture that engorges their livers. And that process requires tubes to be shoved down a duck's throat for a 20-day feeding program. That swells their livers up to 10 times their normal size. And the procedure, as you can imagine, leaves the ducks, or geese, it's mostly ducks, too big to walk or even to breathe before they're slaughtered. Carlina Rivera, a Manhattan councilwoman who sponsored the foie gras legislation, said her bill, quote, tackles the most inhumane process, end quote, in the commercial food industry. This is one of the most violent practices, and it's done for a purely luxury product, she said. Other countries, including India, Israel, and Britain, have banned the sale or production of foie gras. Whole Foods stopped selling the product in 1997, citing cruelty, and Postmates stopped delivering it in 2018. New York was seen as a critical battleground where an expense account culture of extravagance has fed demand for foie gras for decades. That tradition, however, gave way to an increasingly progressive city council. The bill bars the sale of foie gras produced by force-feeding birds, with each violation punishable by a $2,000 fine. About 1,000 New York City restaurants have foie gras on their menu at this time, but a greater impact may be felt on the farms north of New York City that produce foie gras. Sergio Saravia, a founder of La Belle, a company that produces foie gras, and head of the Catskill Foie Gras Collective, told the New York Times that California and New York were its biggest markets, so the ban is devastating. Councilperson Rivera says that changes were made to the original bill's language to help upstate farms. For instance, the ban will not take effect until 3 years after its passage, giving the farms a chance to adjust their business model, she said. The maximum fine for violating the ban was increased to $2,000 per violation from $1,000, but a proposed criminal penalty of up to a year in jail was eliminated. More than half the city council, 30 members, signed on to sponsor the foie gras legislation, which was part of a package of anti-animal cruelty legislation that advocates said was among the most significant to be passed in New York City in years. Other legislation in the package will prevent horse carriages from working on humid days, which is measured on something called the equine heat index, which is a measure of temperature and relative humidity. It creates a mayor's office of animal welfare and prohibits the practice of capturing and transferring of wild birds like pigeons. New York City's ubiquitous wild birds are sometimes trapped and transported out of state to be used as targets in game shooting. Just when you thought, you know, like, oh, okay, there's enough animal cruelty in the world, here's one more form for you to learn about. Wild pigeons being trapped and taken away to be shot in target shooting. Justin Brannon, a Democratic councilman who represents Brooklyn and who sponsored the animal welfare legislation, said the office will be creating a central place to deal with animal issues. Mayor Bill de Blasio intends to allow the bill to lapse into law. That is, he is going to opt not to sign or veto the legislation, according to his office. This is different from what we have at, say, the presidential level or in the governor's office in California, where you can have something called a pocket veto, where if a piece of legislation isn't signed, it's dropped and it has to be rebrought. In New York City, it's different. If the mayor doesn't sign, it goes on. It becomes legislation. Allie Feldman Taylor, founder and president of Voters for Animal Rights, said the animal rights package will protect animals used for food, entertainment, and also protect wildlife. She characterized the bills as the most significant animal rights legislation in our city's history, serving as evidence that New York City is becoming more compassionate, she said. And oddly enough, the only veterinarian in opposition to that bill was a paid consultant from the Hudson Valley Foie Gras Company, this veterinarian misled the committee on several accounts, and his testimony regarding the health of birds who are force-fed is biased and untrustworthy. So I thought that was just good work by those activists. It was over 50 other animal groups that helped out on that. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino. We are coming to the end of the hour. Just a couple of events. The Chili Cook-Off at the Chico Art Center is going to be featuring 4 out of 9 vegan options. Gogi's all-vegan buffet in honor of International World Vegan Day on November 2nd is something to take a look at. Also on November 2nd is the Cube of Truth, hosted by Anonymous for the Voiceless. That'll be happening from 12 to 4 p.m. at the City Plaza in downtown Chico. All right.